You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Titusville, and the Beaches, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Vieira, 94.7 FM, and W264AS, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita McGee on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. And boy, do we have an action-packed show today. We've got our good friend, Katie Jacobus, is here, and she's running for Brevard County Judge Group 5. And we also have in studio my very good friend and fellow League of Women Voters sister, Dr. Vicky Barlow. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you
for having us.
Thank you, Sita. I appreciate it.
We're glad we found you, Vicky. We were wondering where you were.
I am so sorry.
No, it's okay.
We went to the wrong radio station. We wondered why it was empty and no one was there.
It's because all the fun is happening here now.
Well, you know what happened? Ellen Little and I, who everybody knows that Ellen is here every Monday with me on Viewpoint with Sita and friends, we had the opportunity to move stations and come to WWBC with Pastor Paul. And now we're into three FMs and one AM, which is great. And Ellen, who's the genius behind the show, has been getting us a lot of downloads as well. What was the last count?
Almost 2,200 downloads off the last show.
Yeah. So. I mean, you know, sometimes you don't feel like you're making a difference in this world. But if one person listened to our show and we could change their mind, it's we did it. Yeah. And of course, we want plenty of people to vote too.
Yeah. Amen. Right? Yes.
So
no matter who you vote for, we want you to vote. Just get that message loud and clear.
Exactly. So we realized you weren't here, and so we called WMEL. And that was kind of like divine intervention for me, because this morning I called WMEL from the gym because they had left me a message if I wanted to advertise for my campaign. And so I had to return a call, and I spoke to the lady this morning. So I had her on speed dials. I said, wait a minute, you might be there. So we found you.
And we were wondering where people were. I got your email and thought, oh, no, because my husband had the right address. I didn't. So we jumped in the car, and we were getting ready to pull away when the lady came out to let us know.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Barlow.
And thank you, Divine Intervention, for making sure that you made it here
so,
safely.
So we want to talk a little bit this morning. You know, Ellen, you know, you saw my Facebook post about someone. You know, we're all running for office because we feel like we can make a difference. Not everyone had the same opportunities in life to go to school and get a doctorate or a PhD or a law degree or a medical degree. Of course, my children got all their degrees and everything. But I made a conscious decision once I had children to focus on them and their education. And so I'm an LPN, and somebody was attacking me for being a licensed practical nurse. And in my mind, I said, well, if only they know, a licensed practical nurse is a gem. Yeah. We make good money, number one. Not great, but good enough to be, you know. And we help our patients. We do everything that the RN does. And so then I started thinking, well, why didn't I go back to school and further my education? And, well, I produced a lawyer. I produced an engineer. I have a child who's a micromolecular biology major, and I have a daughter who runs a business. It wasn't that I didn't want to, but I had sisters and brothers in Trinidad and Tobago that need cash. Yeah. And, you know, not going to school to further my RN was something I made a conscious decision to work and help my husband with our children and send money back home from my sweet, loving mother who's passed away now. So the LPN money, I consider it a blessing. It was a blessing that I was able to take care of people in the nursing homes for 29 years, loving years. And I love the elderly. I feel like they're part of my life now. So I put up a Facebook post about somebody who attacked me. And I just want to say, for all the candidates who are running, whether you're Republican or Democrat or independent, whoever you are, thank you. Thank you for running. And for those who attack us, that's not cool. Yeah. You know, if you want to win on negative ads, be my guest. If you want to win because you want to make the $29,000 that the state gives you as a state representative, be my guest. I do make more than that as an LPN working 4 days a week.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But the thing is, it's not fair to be attacked for who you are and your principles and values. The bottom line is that most of us know, my mother had a saying, she used to say, you know how your pot is boiling. Nobody else does.
Yeah.
I knew how my pot was boiling.
That's right.
And I enjoyed working. So I don't want to make excuses, but I just want people to understand that you can't judge someone unless you walk in their shoes.
Exactly.
Right?
And by the way, anybody who wants to throw stones, the job will be open again in like 2 years. If you want to run, you know, if you feel like you're responsible enough that you could run and do it, by all means, throw your hat in the ring.
Right.
But for the people who do, I have nothing but pride and just good fortune for everybody that runs. It doesn't matter if I agree or disagree with their points, but I'm just so thankful that people are still willing. Because I haven't thrown my hat in the ring yet. So
well, you may.
You never know.
But you know, the bottom line is everybody at the end of the day, they want the same thing. They want a safe home for their children.
That's right.
They want a great education. They want a job with benefits that include health care, which we all talk about all the time.
And mental health care.
And they want a safe environment. Yes. How you get there might be a little bit different. But, I mean, there's no reason to bash candidates, right?
Right. So, and that's the great thing about the election process. I mean, I think that when you're running for office, you want to serve Brevard County. And when you run for office, it's such a, I mean, it's a daunting feat for anybody that puts their name in the hat alone. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a big job. It's a lot of time. It's a lot of expense. But people are doing this because they truly want to serve Brevard County.
Right.
And I think that that should be recognized, that, you know, that if you want to serve Brevard County, then, you know, give people the recognition for what they're doing with the potential of not being able to, having gone through, you know, the time away from their family and the expense and all the time that they put into it, they may lose, but they're doing it because they have a passionate desire to serve Brevard County.
Right, and be civil and respectful.
Yeah. Yes.
Just don't talk about civility and being respectful, but show it in your everyday life. Do it in your own homes, do it at work, and show respect for the candidates. Don't label people and just go after them, right?
And so, I have to say that there have been some posts that have been very, I mean, they're very specific and they want answers to questions, but they have been very nice.
Right.
You know, about just debating back and forth about how different things are going to go or how we're going to be able to pay for things, I think was one of the posts. But nonetheless, it's still civil.
Right.
You know, and it's okay to debate. We've just lost that art of being able to debate
anymore
without being mean. We lost
that loving feeling.
Oh, there you go.
So
oh boy.
For our listeners who are tuning.
Music career next.
So Katie Jacobus is here, and she strikes me of having a really good work-life balance. I love it. That's another show we probably will have with you later on. But
Let's get to the campaign first.
But
we'll do
yeah,
that.
But right. Katie went to law school, and you know what? I read in your bio that you went to Washington, D.C., and that changed your mind about becoming an attorney.
It actually,
so tell our listeners a little bit about your background.
It kind of set me on the path of, well, I was raised in Brevard County. I actually grew up across the street from my husband, so we're a longtime Brevard County residents. And I have a 8-year-old son and a 5-year-old daughter. But I started this path of becoming a judge because when I was a kid, my parents took us up to D.C. for my dad had a work conference up there. And it was during the fall, and I was raised in Florida, and I had never seen a turn leaf. Like, I had never seen a fallen leaf, and I thought it was the coolest thing in the world. I could have cared less about the Washington Monument or any of these great historical buildings until we got to the Supreme Court. And I just was enamored with, I mean, it was the, I mean, 82 maybe, with these women coming out with big shoulder pads and the fancy suits. And I asked my mom, like, what is this place? And she explained, you know, what lawyers do and what judges do and what justice is and what happens in the Supreme Court. And after that, I was just obsessed with this idea of justice and being a player in it. And that's really when I decided that I wanted to one day be a judge. And I've kind of set my path, my career path, in order to enable myself to do that.
What a beautiful plan. Long-term plan.
Well, it's funny because you were like, okay, so I have to be an attorney.
Yeah.
Right, so I have to get through that first. And I have to be a judge.
Right, and what a light. And then you went to Satellite High, and then you went to the University of Florida.
University of South Florida.
The University of South Florida. And then you went to Florida Coastal School of Law. And you began your career as a state attorney, so you do have experience.
I do, yes. I was a prosecutor for several years, and I've done criminal defense for several years as well. So I've been practicing since 2006, and this is it's a criminal bench that I'm running for, and I've seen both sides as being a prosecutor and a criminal defense attorney, as well as the fact that I practice throughout the state of Florida. So I've kind of been in front of all different kinds of judges of all different levels of experience, and I have a good idea of what makes a great judge and how to run a courtroom. And I really think that at this point in time, I'm, you know, one of the most qualified candidate for this position.
Right. And we all know that voters are going to play a critical role in your race.
Yes.
So tell our voters where exactly is your district. Of course, we know it's the entire Brevard, right?
Yeah, yes, it is. It's a Brevard County race. And I'm very excited that there are so many people turning out for early voting and absentee voting. I think the numbers are almost double of what they were last year. So it's so great that people are coming out for the primary elections.
Right. And we know that we want to give accurate and meaningful information to the voters out there. So one of the questions that I got on my Facebook private message this morning is for you to explain the meaning of being fair. That all, everybody wants a judge to be fair-minded
right.
on the bench.
I think what being fair as far as a judge is and in life is that you only base your ruling on what's presented in front of you. So if somebody comes to my court, I will listen to the facts, I'll regard the cases with common sense, apply the law, and then decide. So being fair is really having that unbiased role of only deciding on what's brought before you.
So Katie, so tell us a little bit about you have a family.
Yes.
And what were some of the challenges that you face in running for judge in District 5?
I think the challenges as far as, because I do have two small children, but fortunately for my husband and I, all of our family is still here, and we have a great, you know, I call it a village, to help us out because, you know, childcare, you know, because you have a breakfast meeting at 6 o'clock in the morning or 7 o'clock in the morning, then dinner, and you're gone all the time campaigning, which is something that I knew going into this. I recognized what the commitment would be, and I actually decided to run for judge when my daughter went into public school full time. That was my, I've always known when they go in, and I knew the seat was going to be open, so we've been planning this for a long time. That would be the time that I would do that. So I think the challenge is just being present in every role that I'm in. I need to be a present mom when I'm there and not constantly think of the campaign, but I also have to have my campaign obligations at the same time and be present that. So finding that balance has been a little bit challenging.
It has. I mean, we all know about that. Ellen and I have been working on my campaign, and it's kind of rough. We have our phones all the time in our hand and answering emails and questionnaires.
And apologizing a lot to whoever we're with, right? I got to take this call.
Well, I think the hardest thing also is that we're trying to eliminate, now school's back, screen time with our kids. It's 20-minute screen time.
Right.
And she said, my kids say, well, you and Dad have to do it too. So we're kind of like leaning down here trying to, because we have to do campaign stuff, but still.
Right, leaning in the corner so that you're not setting a bad example. Exactly right. Well, and you come from a long line. Obviously, your husband ran a few years ago, too, so that from a campaign, nobody's foreign to this in your family.
No, we are not, and we learned so much the first time.
And you've been such supporters of Brevard County, and I just want to make sure that, you know, it's not just your family, your maiden name family, right?
Yes,
but also the Jacobus family, because they've been a longstanding, you know, support in Brevard County for a long time.
We remember Kurt when he came on our show. Yeah.
And that's one.
Yeah, he had a pretty good sign.
I remember
he
Bruce.
Did. Yeah, he did.
I mean,
yes.
So I'm like long time Brevard County.
Well, that's the thing. Kurt and I were both raised in families that, you know, it's kind of your obligation to give back to the community. But all of our parents did it, and Kurt and I have since we were married before we had children, have always tried to do what we can to give back to me because it's a fantastic. Brevard County is the most fantastic county, I think. And to be able to give back for what it's given us is just, I think it's a blessing. So
it's a hidden gem, if you ask me. Yeah. So Katie, one of the things a friend of mine was talking with me yesterday about was a judge should be able to listen, be open-minded, and hear both sides. You have a lot of qualities, so tell us a little bit about listening on the bench.
Well, I think especially for the county court position, being able to listen because you have oftentimes their pro se, which are unrepresented litigants before you. So you really need to be able to take the time to listen to, you know, what's before you, but also be able to decide cases without putting pressure on the people before you as well. So I think listening is very important because, again, to be fair, as a judge, you need to take before you what's brought before you only and nothing else. So being able to listen to both sides and and apply the law and then decide is so important.
And one who might not come with Robert's Rules of Order
Correct.
And all of
those,
you know, stickler type of things of interruptions and that kind of stuff, especially if they're representing themselves.
Yes,
right. And oftentimes you need a judge that also understands where that person is coming from, their community, the environment. And it's always interesting when you have somebody like you who've lived in Brevard County for so long and you pretty much know the county.
Yes.
Yeah, because you have a lot of experiences. So tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. I don't even know if we said the name of our show, Viewpoint with Sita and Friends today.
We said it on the Facebook Live.
Oh, we did, yes.
So if you missed that,
give our listeners a little bit about your experience because you have a lot of experience as an attorney.
Yes, I do. I started out my career as a certified legal intern with the state attorney's office, and then I joined a private defense firm where I kind of worked my way up to be able to truly manage the criminal defense part of the firm and eventually made partner. And in that role, I was able to practice throughout the state of Florida, and I handled everything from first-degree felonies all the way down to second-degree misdemeanors And then I actually went back to the state attorney's office because when you're in private practice, only about 5% of your cases go to trial, and I really miss being in the courtroom. That's my favorite part of being a lawyer. So I went back to the prosecutor's office for about 4 years. And then I joined my husband in Jacobus Law to go back to criminal defense.
She's a no-nonsense gal.
Yes, I do. I enjoy criminal law. I really do. And most recently, I've handled everything from a racketeering case to an aggravated battery with a firearm down in Vero. So it's really been, I've been very fortunate for the career that I've had.
So what type of cases will you be listening to?
The county court is, you hear misdemeanors, traffic tickets, and then that's the criminal seat that we have now, but there's also a county position, and I'm not running for the county seat, but it can switch over to that. And that's any cases litigated for $15,000 or under.
And also, people in the business community want to know, do you have experience with litigation in the business side of things?
Very much so, because especially when I was in private practice and now owning my own law firm, I've managed our business. We're small business owners right now, so I do have very much experience with owning businesses.
And this is Ellen's favorite part, your website, if people want to go and look at your website and see what else you're doing and what kind of events do you have coming up.
My website's www.katieforjudge.com. And right now the events we have coming up, primaries is in 8 days. So right now we're doing a lot of waving and getting our word out there.
You know what, Ellen,
signs are amazing, by the way.
Yes.
And I would like to say, evidently, one thing that I learned on this campaign trail is people think that I look young, which normally I would really appreciate. However, I am 42 years old, and I've been practicing for many, many, many years. So
this is the one time when a woman does not want to be
looking young. I know.
Exactly. Might want to mark this moment down.
I know, exactly.
Well, you know, that's funny, because my son, BJ, over the weekend, I've been so busy with... Everybody knows I work because I love my patients and I want health insurance too. God, I can't wait till we have an insurance Medicare for all or something, right? I just can't wait.
Yes.
And so my son says, Dan, Sita, I didn't realize you had so many gray hairs. And I'm like, I didn't get a chance to color my hair. It's amazing, between working and running the campaign and trying to get guests for the radio show and be a mom and a wife and a friend and everything else. Some things got to go, right? And the other day I said to my husband, I said, well, today we're going to go out for dinner. Well, guess what? I started doing a questionnaire for the campaign, and it took about 3 hours. And
welcome to my world.
And so I'm like, well, you can't just answer willy-nilly. If somebody asks you about the environment, you need to know, you know, about dredging and whatever we need to do for a lagoon, where the money's going to come from and everything. And then it came and he says, it's 9:10. And you started at 6. I said, oops, I forgot to eat. But I should be losing weight. But anyways, so Katie, what kind of clubs do you belong to? Because people want a judge who is well-rounded.
Yes.
And, you know, doing a lot of things in the community as well. Well, but being a mom and having children in school is difficult enough, right? But you find a time to be a part of the community as well.
Absolutely. I've been a board member for the National Veterans Homeless Support for the past 6 years, which is an organization that's near and dear to my heart. They do so much for our homeless veterans in our community. I'm a member of the Friends of Sally's House, which is a great organization. My husband and I have chaired the Signature Chef Dinner for the March of Dimes. I was on the board for South Brevard Sharing Center. I've done the Dancing with Brevard, which is something that's completely outside my skill set. That is, I don't have any kind
of that.
Experience. I don't dance. I didn't do any of that stuff. So I got looped into that. But yes, it was fun. It was a good experience. We raised a bunch of money for a charity. So it was a great experience.
And I know we always ask this when people come on the show who's running as a judge. What do you suggest we do in Brevard County, Florida, with the backlog of cases?
I think one thing that it would be exciting to have in Brevard County is a true jail judge. And that would be a judge that would be at the jail, basically a full-time position there.
Like a night court kind of thing?
Kind of, but it would be all day. It would be a day-long, because they could handle...
A Saturday. If you think about it, take a day off during the week and do a Saturday.
Well, they have the Saturday initial appearance, but there's not a true judge that's running the docket there.
Mm-hmm.
And the great thing about that is, one, it would cut on costs for transporting inmates to the courthouse, as well as safety issues with the transportation of inmates to the courthouse. And also, you have people in there that are in on a second-degree trespass with a $500 bond, and they could be in there for 30 days, and if they keep coming before the same judge, they can resolve the cases. So therefore, it would kind of lessen the population at the jail, because it's just so overwhelming right now. So, and I think that would help out not only with the jail, but also with the dockets in Brevard County courthouses right now.
Right. And we have so many friends that are state attorneys and defense attorneys, and they always talk about they're overwhelmed with so many cases. What can we do to get more attorneys to apply to be a state attorney or a defense attorney?
I think a lot, I mean, and I, it was a big push for me when I was in law school, as far as like trial experience, and, you know, it's a great way to get your feet wet, even if you want to go into civil litigation, to become a trial attorney. The dockets are so overwhelming, and the state attorney's office and prosecutors do such a fantastic job. But I think also it's, you know, educating and helping, you know, I was a juvenile prosecutor for many years, and getting the resources to the juveniles and helping to prevent the recidivism that is so prevalent, and getting them the resources to really get them on the right track, so that way they don't become into the system when they're adults.
Right, and also pay the public defenders and the state attorneys a little bit more. I mean, and of course, everybody wants to know where you're going to get the money, mm-hmm. but the truth is, some of them, by the time you pay your mortgage and car payment, and put food on the table and student loans. I've heard a lot of attorneys complain that they didn't even have enough money left over at the end of the year to do something extra with them, with their families.
Well, that's one reason why I left the state attorney's office this last time. And it was the main reason is because almost my entire paycheck was going to childcare because my two kids were young. And it didn't make sense for our family for me to be paying that much money in childcare on a state attorney's office salary. It is true. I mean, it is... They work so hard, and they are fantastic. So
yeah, even when my daughter graduated from the University of Virginia Law School, and she passed the bar, she'd considered it, but the truth is, a lot of her friends were discouraging her and saying, you know, by the time you pay your health insurance and put some money in your 401k, you really can't even find a decent home to buy because I think it was $40,000+ a year. And I have to say, LPNs make more than that.
Yeah. Just another plug for the haters out there.
Just to throw it out there, right? So one of the questions I wanted to ask you, do you believe judges should be required to report attorney misconduct? Because we've had a case of that. We had a couple of cases out in Brevard.
I think it depends on what it is. If it's an extreme case, then, you know, if an attorney comes before you and openly lies, I think that's the worst thing that you could possibly do in a courtroom is lie to a judge. But I think it's got to be a case-by-case basis because there's certain ways that you can address the issue without going to the extreme of reporting to the Florida Bar. But I think that there are instances in which, you know, it is appropriate.
Right.
So what are some people saying? I mean, because I know you're out campaigning and talking and, you know, speaking in front of, so what are some of the people saying at some of these town halls or events that you're going to? What are some of the questions that you'd like to kind of clear up for everybody so you can, I mean, one of them is that you're nonpartisan. Make
right.
sure that
and
everybody knows that.
Yes, that is. And that's right. One of the, it's kind of the difficulty with as far as running for judge because there are the judicial rules in Canon 7, which I am prohibited from answering a lot of questions, which is frustrating for the voter, understandably, because they want to know where you stand on certain things. But I can't say how I would rule on certain things. And it's kind of like, you know, when you go in to hire a lawyer, you don't necessarily ask them these questions that you
yeah,
want from your...
Yeah, what do you think the prognosis is going to be?
Right,
if
exactly.
I don't know the facts yet.
Yes.
Yeah,
so
and she sticks to the rules because I even invited her to come over and eat some curry chicken, but she couldn't come because I would have campaign material there. The judges mm-hmm. are prohibited to be in any places where it's political.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I think it's good in a way because for us, the voters, we don't want somebody knowing how they're going to rule ahead of time.
Right, yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But it is nonpartisan, so I can't say, you know, what my political affiliation is or, again, anyhow I would rule on certain things. What I can say is that, you know, I believe in the Constitution. I believe that it's the judge's role to follow the law and to serve Brevard County. Yeah.
So how can we reduce the high number of juvenile offenses? I mean, can you say anything about that? I mean, what can we do? Is it just a foundation of family or community education? Because, you know, that's one of the things that concerns a lot of us is seeing so many young people locked up. And what can we do?
And I think it's a combination of all of those things. It really is. It's family, it's community, it's educating, it's getting services in place for these kids that one might not know, oh, this is right, this is wrong, just innately, or, you know, any kind of, you know, issues they might be having as far as, you know, difficulty in school, because if you get frustrated, if you're having a hard time with learning disabilities or not getting ahead and you don't have the support system, you get frustrated and then you just, I don't want to do it because it's school. And then when you don't have an interest in school, then it leads you down a different path. And it's just, you know, recognizing these kids and getting services in place so that they could be successful.
Right. And that, isn't that what we all want? you know, at the end of the day, that's what everybody, that's what we all talk about.
Well, just think, it was equality. A field trip with you and your parents that changed your entire course of your life.
Yes.
And it was, you know, you were looking at leaves and pretty things, and then all of a sudden you show up at the Supreme Court and you're like, this is my life.
Right.
This is what I want my life to be.
Right.
And unfortunately, I don't think that we're exposed to field trips anymore and to some things that
Children just can't afford it.
True.
I mean, you know, I remember once my brother was invited to go to Port of Spain, Trinidad and Tobago, to the zoo. And my father didn't have the $2 to give him for the excursion. And I remember my mother telling us, hens should lay eggs, we'll sell a dozen eggs and we'll get the $2. And I told those hens, lay those eggs. For God in heaven's sake, lay the eggs. And we did. We got our eggs.
Yeah, right.
And we sold a dozen eggs and we made the $2 for my brother Anand to go on that zoo field trip. He, of course, is an attorney today. And we never forget that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, because we did not have the opportunity. It's so important that sometimes, like Katie, you're involved in a lot of fundraisers, as I am, and we give to the community so that we can help people at United Way and different places. So because we know that they're doing that for children, right?
And that's that was the thing when I first started at the state attorney's office, realizing how many kids don't have their own bed to lay their head in. And for me, that was such a profound experience because when you have a really bad day, the one thing you want to do is just go lay your head on your own pillow. And to not that's me as an adult.
Yeah.
But to have that feeling as a child, to not have that, and I mean that's just it's a small piece of it. But you know, it is getting out there and doing what you can, either you know, providing your time at these places or fundraising or things like that. It all comes together for.
Well, it's about community engagement,
yes.
Right? And I think that's the power of a judge. I know that Judge Majeed used to take that opportunity to teach as well. And I see that in you as well, because you've been there, you've been in the community, and you understand where people are coming from. So tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, have you received a lot of endorsements? Because we only have a couple of minutes left, and I know the list is long, so just give us a few.
I have been Sheriff Ivey's endorsed me. Scott Ellis has had some very nice things to say about me. Steve Crisafulli, you can go to my list on www.katieforjudge.com and see the list of endorsements that I have.
And just think, everywhere there's a sign, there had to have been some permission.
Yes, we've gotten permission from...
And there's a lot of Katie for Judge signs
out there.
So there's a lot of love out in Brevard
County.
Because
I heard they're taking people's signs and throwing them away, too, if you didn't get permission.
Absolutely.
But I also want to talk about Sheriff Ivey. You know, he's been on the show quite a few times, and one of the things that he said, and I've used it plenty of times, is you have to be the top cop in your home. Mm-hmm. And for your children. And that is so true, because sometimes I feel like my parents were very strict and very mean to us, but they were very tough on us. And looking back, I'm grateful for it, because at that time it didn't seem that way. But now when I look back, the stories and what they taught us resonated with so many of us and the 18 children. So we have a minute left, so give us the website one more time, Katie, and remind everybody why they should vote for Katie in 30 seconds.
Oh, goodness. Okay, good thing I talk fast. It's www.katieforjudge.com. I am running for Brevard County Court Judge Group 5. I've been an attorney for many years. I was a prosecutor. I've been a criminal defense attorney. I practice throughout the state. I have the experience. I have the temperament. And I have the knowledge to run the courtroom to be fair to all people that come before me and make it an efficient courtroom.
And I think you have a lot of common sense. You will be firm, fair, decisive. You will listen. And I think our listeners should go to your website and see all the beautiful pictures and your family and how well-grounded you are as well.
And there's so many wonderful people in Brevard County that have supported me from all throughout Brevard County. So if you want to come to my website and see the wonderful people, please do so.
Well, we are going to take a quick break, Sita and Katie, and we're going to be right back with Dr. Vicki Barlow and just right after we hear from our sponsors. So stay tuned.
Sisters and founder of Simply Sita Skincare and these great sponsors. Portions of Sita and Friends is brought to you by Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture Store inside the Merritt Square Mall at the Sears Wing. Save big on furniture working with a flexible family-owned store with all the brands you love, from Ashley, Serta, Coaster, and so and more. Brand new, warranties as well, and delivery and haul-away available at a fraction of the cost of most stores and delivered in 7 to 10 days. Free, no credit checking and financing, and free interior design. The owner, Scott Palmer, has been in the mattress and furniture business for over 30 years, and Cloud9 has been serving Central Florida for 7 years now. Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture Store, available at 321-459-2473. Again, call them 321-459-2473 or visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 8 locations serving Brevard County. So if you have an emergency, need a physical, or when your doctor is unavailable, with 8 locations, MedFast offers top quality care that is close by and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MedFast, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. MedFast Urgent Care opens 7 days a week with the convenience of 8 locations serving Brevard County. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000 or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With 3 locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on WWBC AM 1510. We're also on FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. We had a really robust first half hour with our friend Katie Jacobus, who's running as a candidate for Brevard County Judge in Group 5. And Ellen will post that later, so whoever didn't get to listen, they can hear it again.
Absolutely. Right. And we also have a Facebook, really quick Facebook Live on our Viewpoint with Sita Facebook page,
right.
Sita Media.
And so our second part, this is a good time to do a show on opioid crisis and drug awareness and suicide prevention and all those things, because there's so many people in our community and around the United States that are suffering from things like this. So we thought it was a good day. My friend Vicky Barlow and I met, we've known each other for a while, and we just happened to meet up last week at an event, and she wanted to come on the show. So we moved another guest to next week so we could bring Vicky on.
Yes.
So Dr. Barlow, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a retired psychologist. My son died 2.5 years ago from an overdose. He was a beautiful young man, was doing very well. Relapse is common among addicts. And he had to take that one last hit, and it was laced with fentanyl, and it killed him immediately. One of my specialties as a therapist was grief therapy. But even knowing what I did, I knew that losing a child to suicide or to overdose, you don't get over. The grief is profound. You grieve forward. You know, he would have been this age, he would have been doing this, and he would have...
And you miss him, and we understand. And Mr. Barlow, I know you're here as well.
No. He's Mr. Wilds. I kept my maiden name because when we married 7 years ago, I had all my licenses, degrees, oh, all certificates. Of
it. It's like me. My nursing license is still in my ex-husband's name. License is still in, because, damn, you know why? Because I'll tell you why. My naturalization certificate, which everybody knows how hard I fought to come to America, right? And I love it. America's been good to me. It is in Cedar Durgin. And they said, if you want to change it to Cedar Ishmael Begi, you have to send in the original. And I said, over my dead body. I am not sending it anywhere.
We are
anywhere.
Not parting with this piece of paper. Not,
and my daughter was like, no, don't send it. They'll lose it. So I need my nursing license, the same thing. So I kept it. So I certainly understand. So I wanted to ask you.
Yes, ma'am.
Little bit about how you felt. Because, you know, oftentimes we talk to moms about how they feel when they lose a child or they lose something precious. But we don't ask dads. So if you want to take 30 seconds and join in on the conversation, that would be nice.
I'd be happy to. I also have been impacted by addiction. My son, who's 47 now, was a drug addict for most of his life, and he has been clean the last 4 years and actually runs an AA center in Gulf Shores, Alabama, for addicts. He's the house manager of the place, and he's remained clean. So one of the things that Vicki and I talked about when we were courting, which I met her 10 years ago, was, you know, how do we deal with this in our families? Because we both have the problem.
It's a dance, because you walk a tightrope between you don't want to enable, but at the same time you want to help. And you never know which direction, if you've gone too far, you haven't gone far enough.
So the key to addiction is education and awareness and, of course, treatment. So tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, well, the best research that we have from, say, National Institute of Mental Health shows us that medication-assisted therapy is the best, the most successful treatment of addicts. And there is resistance to that. There are some agencies, there are some groups that just don't, you know, you have to be totally clean. There's often controversy in the addiction field. They have drugs. My son was on one. While you take it, you have no cravings. Miracle drug, but then it's a matter of paying for it and getting access to it. Narcan also saves lives. It's a wonderful thing. People could be dead, blue lips. You give them the shot, and all of a sudden they return to life. There are some, and I hate to say this, who don't want to give Narcan or make it available, thinking, you know, they're losers. They're addicts. And that's heartless in my mind. That's cruel.
And it's an expensive drug as well, because I heard, like, in prisons they don't give it when they should be given it.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the problem. When we were moving here 7 years ago, I was working on my license. I was going to set up another private practice here. I got very ill and had to give it up. But one of the things I read about, there was a woman senator in Florida. I believe she was in Miami. I wish I could remember her name, but she wrote...
Was it Nan Rich?
It could be. She was a black woman?
No.
This was back in the 60s. But the legislation was phenomenal. It was the best legislation in the country. Florida had the best treatment. They had long-term inpatient. You know, nowadays they just clean the drugs out and they're out. They had agencies where they would come once they were out of the hospital that would make sure they found a job, that they found a new community, that they found housing, provided support. When I moved here, I learned that the Florida legislature was defunding all of these services. The state of Florida is now last in the country when it comes to
treatment.
Substance abuse treatment.
Yes, yes, I saw that.
And I, when my son died, I was overwhelmed with grief. I gave up everything. You know, I backed out of all of my commitments, all of committees, everything. I couldn't deal with it. And I went online seeking support. And I found an organization called GRASP. And it gave online support. There were thousands on this list. There's so many people losing their parent, their child, their grandchild, their loved ones. And like I said, the grief is profound. And I talked with the people there. I called. And they told me I needed to wait because I was going to support a grief group. And they said that I would get triggered. You know, I needed time. I think now if there were people interested, I could start one.
Right.
But I also found International Overdose Awareness Day. They're started in England. They're all over the world. And you could get resources, and they would advertise for you. August 31st is International Overdose Awareness Day. This will be our third time creating an event. And it will be August 31st at Friendship Fellowship, right off of Route 1. The address is 3115 Friendship Place, Rockledge, Florida. It will be from 7 to 9. And what we're going to do, we'll have either a doctor or a nurse come and talk about...
Oh, an attorney?
Nice. Oh, God, we would love that.
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Maybe yeah, next because, year we can
Because, you know, the thing is, people don't understand that the history of drug addiction as well. And it's not just from illicit drugs. This can also be from prescription drugs
many
as
doctors.
Well.
Yes, yeah.
You know, simple thing as people... and not being labeled correctly, or you leave it in a container where a child can get it.
Or pharmacies pushing opioids and putting in the literature that they were not addictive. And they made a fortune. I'll give you some interesting statistics on this. I remember when Colorado totally legalized all marijuana, have it for recreational use. Over the years, as the use of opioids went up, the rate of violent crime dropped. It was just perfect correlation. The other thing that has happened, there's been a two-year study in correlation, and as the use of marijuana has increased in the state, the number of opioid deaths has decreased.
Because they're hungry, they're eating more.
Well, and also, a lot of people...
You know, that's one of the side effects of the people smoking weed and all that.
But they also, marijuana has pain properties. Mm-hmm. And to smoke marijuana and to relieve the pain rather than... taking opioids.
I often tell
or
that
drinking,
story. I told you,
you know,
that story about
that.
The fellas on the junction in Trinidad that when we were children, my father would warn us about those fellas smoking weed, and they would tell us things about them. And my father is dead, his brothers are dead, all his friends are dead, and those fellas have dreadlocks that are gray, and they're still alive.
Yeah, and
they eat
Crazy Charlie, right?
I mean, they're still alive, and they went on. I was surprised they all owned homes and had jobs and... But, you know, they were stigmatized because they were weed smokers. Not that I'm an advocate of people to go out and smoke weed and all that, but I'm just saying, you're right. They're properties that, you know, in our own way, we didn't realize they were coping with life. And they didn't really go to see the doctor, so maybe we're helping their pain as well.
Well,
anxiety
does,
and all that.
Yeah, and there really is hardly a chance of death with it. And as far as stigma goes... That's one of the purposes of overdose awareness, is to get rid of the stigma. You know, people think, oh, they died of a drug overdose, and I'll give you an example. I flew up to Maryland to arrange my son's funeral, and I got a call from a woman at the church, and she wanted to announce to the congregation that my son had died. I said, yes, and she said, can we tell him it was an overdose? And I thought, I don't want to keep this a secret, and I said, yes. Well, then the minister called me. And this woman had put out a little statement to say, Vicky's son died of an overdose. And I said, no, because I knew there was stigma. And I said, my son was beautiful. He was handsome. He was extremely intelligent. He was a wonderful father. But they hear overdose and they think, bum in the sewer. And these are everybody. It's primarily young white men that are dying now from overdoses. And they're doctors, they're lawyers, they're sons, daughters, they're people that we love. And the research also informs us that addiction is biological. There are people who are predisposed to it. And once they start taking opioids, the opioids actually change the chemistry of the brain. Kind of hijacks it. The frontal lobe controls it's like the executive branch. It's our filter, it's our judgment, it's the last part of the brain that grows, and it gets hijacked. So you're living in misery as an adult, you know that your life is going down the tubes, but you still, you have this desire to repeat this behavior, and it's awful.
And you have to want the treatment as well. Oftentimes we hear a lot of, you know, people don't seek treatments, but you have to want it. You have to want to be able to stay clean.
Right.
And that's where a lot of people get lost, because they can't.
It's hard work.
It's an addiction that they can't.
It's hard work, but they're also, it's a matter of finding a facility or finding a bed, because these programs get cut, and we need them, and we need quality treatment.
So where have we lost our compassion for people who are addicted? Because, you know, if someone is, if you call 911 and you take a person who overdosed, you know, the doctors will do their job and clear the airway in the emergency room, and they'll give them the Narcan and start an IV, and everybody is rah, 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 they're going to help them. But then when they're discharged, there's nowhere
right.
to go.
Exactly.
Where have we lost our compassion? I mean, if somebody have diabetes, we'll give them insulin.
Absolutely.
If they have congestive heart failure, we'll give them breathing treatments, and we buy the equipment and everything else that goes
Absolutely.
With it. But when somebody has a disease where they're addicted, there is nowhere for them to go. It's oftentimes they end up in prison, and they don't
and
get
they
the treatment that
know.
They need either.
They don't deserve
or they become part of the homeless population,
right.
which is, you know, even the veterans, you know, the veterans homeless population, that they say that a lot is because of a lot of drugs, and it's because of
PTSD.
PTSD and what they're taking for that, and what they're what's available to take.
So
for
how
that.
Can we, Vicky, so we have to tell our listeners who we're speaking to. We're speaking with Dr. Vicky Barlow. And she has a PhD. She also volunteers as a mental health therapist at the Daily Bread. We're also friends. She's also in the League of Women Voters with me. And we've talked about about overdose and her son and what we can do. And I feel in my heart that the people who can come up with a plan for this are us moms. Because we know what it is to give birth to children. We know when something is wrong with our children. We can feel it, and we can help them, but we can't do it with our resources. So where did the politicians in the state of Florida lose this compassion? Because we're not funding treatment centers.
My heart was broken. I was so excited when I moved here, and the state was the best. And then to come here and find they were shutting it all down.
And what's the reasoning behind shutting it down? Because, you know, we know that they're trying to trim the fat and have a budget that
well,
works.
Well, when they
but
consider
what is,
within they consider fat, they cut the safety net. They cut
Medicaid expansion as well.
Exactly, exactly.
So how what can we do, Vicky? Because we hear you. I can feel your pain, and I you know as a nurse, as an LPN, I talk to a lot of people as well, and people always tell us about the signs and symptoms of overdose, which if we have people who are listening, nausea and vomiting, drowsiness,
right.
loss of consciousness,
and we will,
difficulty
we will teach
walking,
about that
agitation.
At the beginning, yeah, we will teach how to recognize it. We'll have an education about Narcan. We'll teach all of that. And then after that, we'll have refreshments. And we'll have, if people want to come and bring pictures or mementos of their loved ones and talk about them, we'll have that sharing. And then we'll have a candlelight vigil for them. But what can be done is the legislature needs to start funding these services again. Because instead of people dying, instead of people winding up in the street, give them the treatment so they can be productive members of society that can work, that can own a home, that can vote. Let me throw out a statistic here. 2017, we had about 72,000 overdoses in this country alone. America is number one in overdose deaths. That's not a good thing. And 72,000, you know how long the Civil War was, and it was our bloodiest war. We lost more than we did in Vietnam. 72,000 overdoses. That's more than the people that died in the entire Civil War of this country. It is an epidemic. We need to deal with it. And the research continues as to how best to do that. And we need to listen to that. Many people are against these. One thing is a clean drug exchange. people say, well, why do you give addicts needles? Well, they're going to use needles anyway. They use dirty needles. They don't.
Well, it's a healthcare issue as well.
Exactly.
Because they end up in the ER with all kind of disorders in their blood as well.
We need Narcan for first responders, for people that may run into an addict. And we need the services. We need the treatment centers. We need they call it MAT, medication-assisted therapy.
And a lot of people get addicted to after surgeries. You know, you're going for back surgery or something is wrong and you end up with your prescription pills and you get addicted. So we also have to have doctors reviewing with their patients as well and trying to wean them off drugs as well.
Well, I've talked with several doctors who prescribe medical marijuana. And one woman, she was the doctor, and she said, look, there's a stigma. She says, don't worry about it. She said, this is a plant. It's been used for thousands of years as a medicine. There is a history. This country had forbidden research of marijuana for a long time. But what little research is out there shows that people who have been on it for a long time tend to not have Alzheimer's. It has benefits with cancer, not just alleviating the nausea and the misery of chemotherapy, but actually has some anti-cancer properties. There's a need for more research in the field, but there's so many different elements in it.
Well, and Big Pharma's been blocking it for forever.
Well, right. There isn't enough money in a plant.
Right.
I mean, you know, if you go to Jamaica or some of the other countries, people do, I mean,
if you dive deep into legislation,
Allowed a certain amount, not a whole field.
Right.
But,
right.
You know, that's why they're so happy.
Well, I know, and pharmaceutical companies, the United States is the only country in the world. There's actually legislation that prevents our country from negotiating with pharmacies to lower the price. When we went on our honeymoon 7 years ago, we were in Paris, and Spike ran out of a medication. And we went to a little pharmacy at the bottle, and she said, I can fill it for you, but you have to pay the full cost. So we go in there, he gets the bottle, and he pays it, and he's going, And the pharmacist ran up, she said, what is it, too much? He said, no. He said, this full price is less than the copay I pay in the United States.
Yes, in Trinidad it's the same way because, you know, they get their drugs, the government.
In Canada,
they have
it's
contracts.
The same way.
They look at the contract and they get the one that's best for the country. Mm-hmm. So Vicki, Dr. Barlow, I should say.
Oh, you're my friend. You call me Vicki.
What are some of the things that parents should be looking out for in their children if they suspect something is going wrong and they're using drugs or they're influenced by their friends or maybe you don't know about it but they're abusing prescription drugs? What are some of the things that our parents out there who are listening to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends can look out for, warning signs?
There are a lot of things. You know, one mental health issue, if the child is isolating, staying in their room all the time and not going out, that something is going on. It may not be drug abuse, it could be depression or some mental health issue. If they change friends, they start running with a different crowd. If they, you know, and you have to use your intuition because teenage years, the hormones are going through. And teenagers can be just as intelligent as adults, just as socially aware. But the brain does not stop growing until you're about 28 years old. In psychology, we don't consider someone a full adult until they're close to 30, and it's the frontal lobe. So the kids will know something, like you don't go hill hopping in a car. They used to do that in Maryland. My son took my car one time, and they drive up the hill real fast, and then they're airborne for a while.
Oh, boy.
You know, they know they don't do that, but you get in the car, and they all get excited, and they do it. They don't have that mental judge in there that says, oh no,
it's clouded.
You shouldn't do this.
It's all cloudy.
It's the mom thing, right? When you see your kid at the top of the jungle gym and you just know what's going to happen next.
Well,
it's that.
Yeah. Well,
it's that they're missing.
Well,
that's the part.
We've had so many shows where people came on our show, coaches and public speakers and psychiatrists, psychologists, and we always talk about a good work-life balance, and we talk about faith and family and friends and finances and, most important, a community feel, staying engaged to help
absolutely.
Depression and to help people
absolutely.
Who are isolated. So what would you say it was a good work-life balance for us moms? Because we sometimes we just don't have the time to see what's going on with our kids because we've given so much to the workplace and the boss and the supervisor and trying to make things well so we have the almighty health insurance, right? So what can you tell us in like a minute or so? How can you help our moms out there, busy moms and dads?
Well, if they, you know, they have a day off, maybe they could make a date with their children. If they don't have a lot of them, they've got four or more, but if you only have one or two, make a date. What would you like to do? And we'll spend this time together one-on-one. It's hard. I've been there. When I was going for my master's in Maryland, I had a teenage daughter at home. I had, I was working on my master's at night, and I was working full-time. I never watched the news. I never watched the TV, went to movies, did anything. That was it.
Yes.
But that was those are special times that you're talking because as a kid, those are my fondest memories. Was my dad? There were eight of us, and my dad would take all the girls out for a lunch date once a month.
So sometimes it was 30 minutes left. Yeah. So I just want you to tell our listeners one more time about the event coming up, which I will be attending.
I want to give you full support and tell me what I can do.
So give us a date and the address one more time.
Okay, it's August 31st, which is a Friday. It will be at Friendship Fellowship at Pineda, which is right off of Route 1. The address is 3115 Friendship Place, Rockledge, Florida. And it's from 7 to 9. We'll have education on recognizing, treating an overdose, Narcan. And then we'll have a memorial where people can share about their loved ones, and we'll have a candlelight vigil.
Right. So, Ellen, you'll put that on our website?
I just put it on Facebook, and I will make sure that it is on our website. And unfortunately, we've come to another conclusion of our show. They go so fast. But I just want to thank Dr. Vicki Barlow and Katie Jacobus. Vote. Get out there and vote. But thank you again for coming and sharing your story. And Sita and I will make every attempt to make sure that we get up to Friendship Fellowship to support you during that. And Sita, another great episode of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Folks, we'll see you next week, 1 p.m. live, right here on AM 1510 WWBC.
Thank you. Thank you.